Good morning to everyone. So first of all, thank you very much for the opportunity to do this. You know, when you're in yeshiva, so Tehillim is not exactly something that is very often covered or learned. So I appreciated the opportunity to be able to really look into things of Tehillim, which is something I was not able to do before in my life. our shiur today and our learning today should be for Refuah Shleima for all of Chayalei Tzal that have been injured in the past few days, 20 over last night and over 100 since the operation began. It should be as a zechus and for the success of all the operations of Chayalei Tzal, and it should be le'ili nishmas Aaron ben Ephraim Zalman HaKohen, Roseanne Schnell's father. It was your tzedes bo bayom today, right? So I know there's a number of questions that come up when we do Tehillim, you know, in addition to all the actual words and what the meaning of the various kapitel of Tehillim are. So the general concept of saying Tehillim is something that when you take a step back is almost strange. So we have a lot of tefillos in the Jewish religion. We have a lot of different ways to daven. Much of what we daven in the morning, some of it's from Tehillim, other things are not from Tehillim. There's many ways you could daven. Chazal tell us a person can daven to Hashem just stam. You can just use any language you'd like. You can daven in English, you can daven in French, when you want to just speak to God. So what is it about Tehillim itself that is so special that it became like the go-to sefer of the Jewish people when they want to daven and they want a meaning? So we're going to cover that question. And we're going to see a lot of different insights, text-based insights, source-based insights, what is so special about Tehillim. So before we do that, I know a number of people had a question about who wrote Tehillim. So I figured we could do that first. So who wrote Tehillim?
Let me ask you.
So why do you say David HaMelech? Right. So the Gemara tells us, Chazal tells us that David HaMelech wrote Sefer Tehillim. Right? But when you go to what, why do you say more than one person?
Right.
So how many do you have? You have David.
You have Moshe.
You have Moshe. B'nai Korach. You have Shlomo. Huh? Yeah, you have all these different names, right? You have all these different names, right? So the question is, right, who wrote? The Chazal tell us, David HaMelech wrote Sefer Tehillim. So this question is addressed by the Rishonim and by the Achronim. All the different commentators address this question. Who exactly was the one to put together Sefer Tehillim? Because we see different names. How could it have just been David? So there's a lot of different approaches. I think the most primary approach is that taken by the Radak. So it's interesting to note also, when you look in Tehillim, there are things that happen after David's lifetime. Right? Like Al Naros Bavel, that when we were in Bavel, so we cried for the fact that the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. So that's way after David HaMelech's life. So the Radak, in his introduction, Radak is one of the great commentators on Nevi'im and Kesuvim, on the prophets and on the writings, who is a very fascinating commentator. So Radak writes as follows, in the first source, V'chein kasav b'sifro. So when David HaMelech wrote his book of Sefer Tehillim, he wrote Tefila Shematza Kesuba V'Haisa Kabbalah Etzlam Shehaisa L'Moshe Rabbeinu Alav Hashalom. There were different tefilos, different, like, you know, parchments that had different tefilos, different prayers written on them, different parts of what we would eventually call Tehillim, that they, like, passed down from generation to generation, right? Sometimes a family has a song, right? So they had these different songs, and when David HaMelech wrote Sefer Tehillim, so he included in Sefer Tehillim those extant songs that already existed among the Jewish people. K'moshe ne'amar Tefila Moshe. Like it says, Tefila Moshe, Tefila Moshe. Meaning Moshe Rabbeinu wasn't just involved in writing the Torah. So he also wrote other things, obviously. And those things were passed down through the generations, and David HaMelech included them. V'diber asido shayach erzmano. And David HaMelech also wrote about things that would happen later on. V'diber bo'al galus bavel ashar galios. And he speaks about the various exiles that would eventually occur in later history. V'nechamos harbi shetashav malchus beis David l'makoma. And he also spoke about the recovery of the Jewish kingdom and the recovery of his own kingship. So the Radak assumes, and that's the primary approach, that many of the Asaf, B'nai Korach, Moshe, so those existed already, they were like songs that the Jewish people had, and when David HaMelech compiled the Sefer, so he also included those, because those were fitting also. And the future stuff the Radak assumes David wrote. So we're going to have to see how is he able to know what's going to happen in the future. We consider David was probably a Navi. It was considered a prophet. If you look in the Navi that speaks about David's lifetime, so David HaMelech seemed to have the power of Nevuah, of prophecy. So somehow he was able to know what happened in the future and included that as well. Right? So why, if it's written by so many people, is it known as David's? because he put it together. Oh, so that's like the simple. So the Medrash gives a very fascinating reason, which the real meaning of we'll get to at the end of the shir. So the Medrash writes as follows in the second source. Afal pisha asara bnei adam amru sefer Tehillim. Even though there were 10 people that were really involved in writing the various parts of Tehillim, lo nemar mikulhon, lo nemar al shmosam el al yedavar melech Yisrael. Amongst all of them, the only person that got credit as doing the whole book was David. Mashal. There is a parable that explains the reason why David HaMelech was the one to get credit. Lema David Doma, L'chabura shel malachim shemavakshim lomar himnun l'melech. Let's say there's a group of people and they want to sing a himnun, which is a hymn. Interesting, right? A hymn, a song to the king. They want to sing a song to the king. Amar l'melech, the king says to this group of men that want to sing a song, Kulchem ni'imim, you're all wonderful. Kulchem chasidim, you're all frumis. Kulchem mishabchin lomar himnun l'fani. You all are wonderful and I think you're great to sing songs. Ela ish ploni yomar ali de kulchem. But I want this one person amongst your group to sing the song for all of you. Lama, how come? Shekolo arev, because his voice is beautiful. His voice is attractive. Kach b'sha shebikshu asara tzadikim lomar sefer tilim. So too, says the Medrash, when all of these people wanted to say the book of Tehillim to God, Amar lama Kadosh Baruch Hu. Kadosh Baruch Hu said to him, Kulchem ni'imim v'chasidim u'mishubachim. You're all wonderful. Lomar himnu nufanai to sing to me. Ela David yomar alidei kulchem. But I want David to sing for all of you. Lama? How come? Shekolo arev. Because his voice is beautiful. Very interesting, right? That's why he got credit. So we're going to have to see at the end of the shir, what does that mean? Meaning his voice is beautiful. But obviously, Chazal tell us, David HaMelech, even though he wasn't the only author, he somehow got credit. He somehow got credit for it. So we're going to get back to what the exact meaning is. But that's the story. The author of Tehillim is David, even though there were others that he included in the book itself. Fine. The next question. Right? How come Sefer Tehillim became the go-to Sefer? You could say a lot of different things. There's a lot of different wonderful tefilos. David HaMelech even has tefilos, prayers that are in the actual Navi that he said during his lifetime, which weren't included in Sefer Tehillim. Why don't we say those? I mean, what was it about Sefer Tehillim? So there is, we discussed a number of times, those who come to other shiurim by me, that there's two Gemaras. We always say the Gemara. So there's two Gemaras. There's the Talmud Bavli, the Babylonian Talmud. That's the primary one learned when people talk about doing Dafyomi, or they talk about, you know, I learned Gemara, it's usually referred to the Talmud Bavli, the Babylonian Talmud. But there's also what's called the Talmud Yerushalmi, the Jerusalem Talmud. There was a Talmud that was compiled at the same time, the Talmud Bavli, the Babylonian Talmud, in Jerusalem, in Israel. So that became known as Talmud Yerushalmi. And it's as authoritative. Many times the halachic decisors will quote from one, from the Yerushalmi, to override the Talmud Bavli. There's a lot of interesting things that are just as important in the Talmud Yerushalmi. It's less learned. It was less learned throughout the time in Europe, but it was, what is it?
Why?
That's a very good question, why it became, it wasn't necessarily throughout history like that. Many times the Rambam, Maimonides, and others will quote a Yerushalmi as more authoritative than the Talmud Bavli. So the custom became that the Bavli was more learned. Any true scholar, you know, any big posek, so they know, have to know both. Both are very, very important. Many times when the Talmud Bavli will not speak about a certain issue, or it'll be unclear about a certain issue. So that's when you'll turn to the Yerushalmi, and that'll maybe give more insight about it. So it's just as important, it's just not yet. Yeah, it's a big question. What happens when the Bavli and the Yerushalmi have a contradiction? So what? Yeah, but it happens all the time. I learned in Yeshivas Merkaz Harav in Yerushalayim. So, it's a Rav Kook's yeshiva. So there was a guy there who's a genius. He's 31 years old, not married. He lives in the dorms. And he's already finished all of the Gemara, both Talmud Bavli and Talmud Yerushalmi. He knows everything by heart. He reads a page once when he got drunk on Purim. And so they started asking while he was drunk words, and he knew the exact page in the Talmud for every single word while he was drunk. It's an incredible mind. So he just published a book where he goes through every single time the Talmud Bavli and Yerushalmi disagree. It's 400 pages. Because he knows it by heart. So every single time there's a disagreement, he puts it down in the book. So yeah, so this happens a lot. So there's a difference of opinion what happens. The Ashkenazic poskim, the Bali Atosfos, the Rishonim, the early halachic decisors from the Ashkenazic countries always assume like the Bavli. They call it Talmud Didan, our Gemara, as opposed to their Gemara. Meaning they call, because they assume since we live in exile, so we follow the exile Gemara. So the Sephardic poskim, the Rishonim, didn't necessarily do that. The Rambam and others many times would rule Yerushalmi over the Bavli. many times. So it's a matter of discussion. What happens? There are certain times when we ourselves, without knowing it, do something according to Yerushalmi, because that's the way the halacha was accepted. It's a very interesting discussion. But anyway, so the Talmud Yerushalmi has a very interesting line, a prayer that David HaMelech said after he wrote Sefer Tehillim. So there's the pasuk says, "Agur bo lech olam." David HaMelech says in Tehillim, "I will live in your tent, in your dwelling place forever." So what does that mean? So says the Chazal, Reb Pinchas and Reb Yirmiyah, which is the third source, b'shem Reb Yochanan. Reb Pinchas and Reb Yirmiyah said in the name of Reb Yochanan, "V'ki ala ilas al leiv David shu chay lolamim." Did David HaMelech really believe he would live forever, that he's going to be able to be in the dwelling house of Hashem forever? No. Ela Amar David, this is what David meant to say. Ezke shiyu devarai ne'emarin al shemi b'batei knesios v'batei midrashos. May I have the merit that all the things that I wrote in Sefer Tehillim will be said in my name for eternity. Right, David HaMelech had such a desire that his book, specifically, his prayers should be the ones that like become the go-to sefer, right? And Chazal say a similar thing also, and this is the fourth source, and also in the Medrash, Chazal say, Reb Yudin Omer, Reb Yudin is a person that appears many times in the Yerushalmi, he never appears in the Bavli. He lived in Israel, so. Reb Yudin. Not the one from Pharaoh. Reb Yudin Omer, B'shem Reb Yehuda. Reb Yudin says in the name of Reb Yehuda, Kol Sha'amar David B'tzifro, everything that David said in his book, in Tehillim, Kenegdo, he said about himself, Ukeneged kol Yisrael, and he said about all the Jewish people, Ukeneged kol ha'itim amro, and he said about all the times that will ever be. So Chazal assumed there is something special about Sefer Tehillim, and maybe towards the end of the year, all these will try to give a full picture why, answer all the whys to this. Chazal assumed, just like they said that David HaMelech had the best voice, whatever that means, they assumed everything that David HaMelech did kind of corresponded to everyone. And David HaMelech knew that, and therefore he wanted his book to be the go-to one. It's an interesting thing. And this is, there's a famous Shla. The Shla was one of the great Jewish leaders, one of the greatest Jewish scholars in history. Shla stands for Shnei Luchos Habris, the two tablets of the law. That's what he called his book. His name was Rabbi Yishayahu Horowitz. He was one of the great Jewish leaders in the 16th century. Of you, yeah. Yes, so there's a lot, there's Horowitzes. Most Horowitzes come from the Shla, huh? Yeah. They were a very famous family. Most Horowitzes in the world. Yeah, so there is, the Shla did not believe turkey was kosher. It's a famous thing. There's a big discussion whether turkey's kosher, because turkey only came to Europe, you know, in the last four or five hundred years. First they brought turkeys from India, then they brought them from America. So well,
that's why
they call it kosher. I don't think that's the reason though. I'm not sure if that's the reason they call it that. I'm not sure. Because it's only in modern Hebrew it's called hodu. In Yiddish there was another word, yeah. So, huh?
Indic,
yeah, that's it.
So,
oh, because that's India. That's some of the later, but there's a different word in Yiddish also that the post can use. Yeah. There's always, when you have, there's long discussions in halachic literature about turkey through hundreds of years, so it's a question of which turkey is always they're referring to, because there are two types of turkeys, two species, one from India, one from, both came to Europe. The New World turkeys and the Old World turkeys. So that's, whatever. So the point of the Shla did not eat turkey. So there is a rabbi in YU, who's a Horowitz. He's a Maggid Shir there, and he doesn't eat turkey. That's his family custom. So he says he has cousins who are totally not observant, who will go to Burger King, but they won't eat turkey. So the Horowitzes, are very traditional about the Shla's main thing he was famous for. He was considered one of the greatest mikubalim, one of the greatest mystics in Jewish history. So the Shla writes a very famous line that's quoted by many people about the power of Tehillim. The Shla says, "Umisha nafsho chashka ledavka bo yisparach b'shevachav." Anyone who wants, it's the phone in the closet. Obviously, you have to build a closet in the shul. It's one place you want a phone. It's in the shul. Umishenafsho chashka ledavka bo yisparach b'shevachav. Anyone who wants that their soul should really cleave to Hakadosh Baruch Hu, as yedabik atzmu b'sefer Tehillim. They should cleave to Sefer Tehillim. V'kvar amru Rabbi Hoseinu, our rabbis in the Gemara already taught us. Shehispalal David HaMelech alav hashalom. David HaMelech had a very specific prayer. Sheyom ruzmirosa v'batei knesios v'batei medrashos. That his tefillos should be the ones that dominate in shuls and batei medrash throughout eternity. So this is why Sefer Tehillim became the go-to sefer. Because there was a tefillah of David HaMelech that it should be so, and it was assumed that David HaMelech somehow had insight into what the right way to write a tefillah is. That is why. That is why Tilling became the thing. So we're going to have to now go understand like why that's true. And it's interesting to point out Rav Hirsch has a very beautiful commentary in Tehillim. So there's no point to do Rav Hirsch in Hebrew, people always point out, because Rav Hirsch wrote his commentary in German. All his stuff was written in German. So when you read it in Hebrew, it's not the original anyway. So English is just as good. Right? So Rav Hirsch and Tehillim point out this dominating aspect of Tehillim wasn't just true. Rav Hirsch was the great leader of German Jewry. Right. So it was not just true for the Jewish people, but for the whole world. In the sixth source, one aspect of the efficacy of his Psalms, which David had expected and proclaimed with full confidence, has been gloriously vindicated even now after so many centuries, in that the Psalms have been disseminated with telling effect, not only among the elements of his own people, of whose liturgy they form a substantial part of to this very day, but also among almost all the other peoples known to us. Thus they constitute a shining testimony of the divine spirit which rested upon the singer when inspired with so much faith and confidence he first uttered these glorious hymns. So first points out, this dominating aspect of Tehillim, David's tefillah, wasn't just answered in the form of, you know, the Tehillim Gruv Noiv Tzedek. It was answered also in the sense that throughout the world, so Tehillim, Psalms, is like a very, people find it to be a very inspirational thing. David HaMelech somehow had this very powerful ability to do that. Psalms, you sure? Psalms are very, right? So Rav Hirsch assumed that that was also because of somehow David's power in making this tefillah and having his tefillah be answered, that he should be the dominating author of tefillos. So the real question now, we know all the what's, right? How comes? So the question is why? What is it about David that made him the author, right? Then he was the one that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to be the author. And what was it about David and Sefer Tehillim that Chazal assumed, that everyone assumed, he is the one that is really, throughout history, the only one that can write the real tefillah. And that his tefillah should be answered, that it should be the dominating book of tefillahs. So that's the why. What would you think? What is yeah?
I find that he is honest.
Honest.
He knows who he is, mm-hmm. He knows his mistakes, mm-hmm. He knows that he confesses, and he gives a shiur.
So what is it about honesty that makes it,
it
applies to everyone.
Oh, if you're honest with yourself.
Meaning if you're honest with yourself and know yourself, then you can, yeah. They say, Simcha Bunim Pershischa, one of the great Hasidic masters used to say, if I am I because you are you, and you are you because I am I, then I am not I and you are not you. But if you are you because you are you, and I am I because I am I, then you are you and I am I. Right? So meaning the point is a person always has to be true to themselves if they want to really know other people. That's the point. You have to be true to yourself first, and then you can really understand others. Right? Yeah. Any other,
Life experience.
Life experience.
Was a warrior as mm-hmm. well as a king, as mm-hmm. well as a shepherd. Mm-hmm. He had so many characteristics that gave him a worldview, mm-hmm. In addition to the prophecy, but gave him experience. He was a sinner and did a mm-hmm. shiva. He had all of those experiences
mm-hmm.
applied to everybody.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
he was also musical.
He was musical, right?
He was also suffering the angst of family problems.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I think almost everyone in society
can relate to him. Yeah.
No, that's what I was going to say.
Yeah.
Where he came from,
right.
Media.
Right.
Scapegoat.
Did he have a good life?
No.
He had a horrible life.
Terrible.
He had a horrible life.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. He had a horrible life. Right. Most the defining aspect of one of the defining aspects of Yiddishkeit is that we do not believe in the perfection of lives of our Nevi'im and of the Avos. We believe the greatness of an individual is made by their God-given ability to make lemonade out of lemons, meaning to make a good life at a very difficult circumstance. That's the defining aspect of a Jew, right? That's what we find. The name Yisrael, right? For the Jewish, what the Torah tells us what the word Yisrael comes from. When the Malach, when the angel names Yaakov after they struggle, right, and he says, "Your name is no longer Yaakov; it's now going to be Israel." So he says, "Kisarisa em Elokim va'adam v'tuchal," because you struggled with both man and God, and you were victorious. So because you struggled, Sarisa, I'm naming you Israel, meaning the name of the Jewish people is struggle. That's our essence, right? So the point is that so David HaMelech, right? I agree everything that's being said. Maybe that's why his kolo is Arev, that he's the best voice. Maybe that's why he's the defining aspect because of who he was. So let's see in the Makoros and the sources, they basically say this idea in a beautiful way. So there is a very famous Gemara in Pesachim. So the Gemara in Pesachim tells us that when David HaMelech wrote Sefer Tehillim, he wrote it with something very special, and that is Ruach HaKodesh. So what is Ruach HaKodesh? Ruach HaKodesh is the divine spirit, right? The Gemara says in the seventh source, the David Mizmor, the Torah, the Pasuk says a Mizmor, a hymn, a song to David, Milamid Sheshar Salav Shechina Va'achakach Amrashir. That teaches us that first he got Lidavid, meaning to David, meaning first he was given the divine inspiration of Ruach HaKodesh, and then he said the Shira. Mizmor Lidavid, when the Pasuk says not Lidavid Mizmor, to David a song, but Mizmor Lidavid, a song to David, Melamid Sha'amar Shira, Va'achakach Shar Salav Shechina. That teaches us that first he said the Mizmor, because the first word is Mizmor, not Lidavid. First he said that, and then Lidavid. Then he was given Ruach HaKodesh. But in any event, he had Ruach HaKodesh throughout the authorship. So what is Ruach HaKodesh? What is Ruach HaKodesh Nevuah? Nevuah means prophecy. Is Ruach HaKodesh the same thing? Right. So what is, people say divine inspiration. What's divine inspiration? It's like, nah, it doesn't mean anything. What is that?
It does. I think anytime anybody does anything artistically,
so you want to say that's Ruach HaKodesh?
Part of it. Uh-huh. I mean, otherwise, or even for that matter, when I think even now that the people who did the Iron Dome, it was divine inspiration.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, we accepted it. We were willing to invest billions of dollars
in it. Anyone notice in this last week's Haftorah that it talks about the Iron Dome?
Yeah.
Amud Barzel, I will make for you an Iron Dome over your land, right?
Yeah.
It's pretty wild, yeah.
When parents name a child, it's Ruach HaKodesh.
Right, so what does that mean? I mean, what is it? I mean, Nevuah is pretty clearly defined by the Bali Machshava. Nevuah means kind of almost like an out-of-body experience where you are taken over by, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and you speak not in your own voice, and whatever else it is. Nevuah is like a real, a real something. Ruach HaKodesh is not that. So like everyone discusses, what is it? Like what?
A higher spiritual level.
So you want to say a higher spiritual level. So it almost sounds almost like something more we can understand, meaning Nevuah is very hard to understand because, but Ruach HaKodesh maybe. So the Radak in his introduction to Tehillim discusses this point about David's authorship in the 8th source. The Radak says, V'ruach HaKodesh, what is Ruach HaKodesh? Hu sheyeh ha'adam ha'shalim mis'asik b'divrei Elokim. When a complete person, a person who has shleimus, a person who has, there's a good English word. What's a good English word for it? Adam ha'shalim, what? Not well worked out, the word is escaping me, but you get the point. When this complete person is involved in divine pursuits, shalim b'chol hergei shosav lo tespat al achamin, and he's in touch with all of his emotions, and not ignoring any of the natural emotion that they have, umidaber masha midaber kederach bnei adam, and speaks in the way you and me speak, totally with consciousness. Elishim me'oreres also ruach elyonis v'sofia hadavarim alashono divrei shevach v'odal alokav o divrei seichel u'musarim. But through his in touchness with himself and with his inspiration, so a ruach elyonis, a greater spirit, a something from above, a higher calling, inspires that person to sing in a certain way, or to say something in a certain way, or to have an idea in a certain way, right? What we would call like a light bulb moment, a moment of real inspiration. Gam yidaber al asidos, and at that time someone can even speak about the future. Meaning, it won't be in the sense of like, and on the fifth day of next year, such and such will happen, but someone who has real insight can say, I have a feeling this is going to happen, and they could be very right, right? The Chazal tells Ezu Chacham Aroas Hanolad, who is the really the wise person who sees tomorrow, right? You can see it. Someone who really knows can tell, right? B'siyu Eloki al Kocha Medaber, with divine assistance to their regular abilities. B'chol Kochos Hamedaber. So the Radak says the essence of what Ruach HaKodesh is something normal. It's like normal divine inspiration from a person who is in touch with themselves and who has insight. It's real, real, real deep insight. That's what the Radak says. So David HaMelech wrote Tehillim with that specific insight, with an in-touchness with his emotions, right? So this gets us more towards what the whole answer to all the questions is. Likutei Maharan in the 9th source is a sefer written by Rabbi Nachman Mibreslov. So who's Rabbi Nachman Mibreslov? Rabbi Nachman Mibreslov, how many people have heard of Rabbi Nachman before? Rabbi Nachman Mibreslov, yeah. Rabbi Nachman has become much more famous in the last number of years. Yeah, the Breslover. So the Baal Shem Tov had a daughter, Baal Shem Tov was the founder of the Hasidic movement. He had a daughter named Udel, or Udel, however you want to pronounce it. There's two different pronunciations. Either Udel or Udel. Yeah. So probably Tudel. So he had, that was his daughter, and his daughter was always with him. She was very close to him. The Hasidim used to come to her for brachas. She was like a very big person. So she had a grandson, and his name was Nachman. So that boy grew up through Nachman of Breslov. So Nachman of Breslov became one of the most famous Hasidic masters. He was a fire. He was very unique in his approach. He had many, many followers. He was very inspirational. He was a very amazing person. Most of Likutei Maharan is discussing dealing with what we would call today depression. He calls it the Marash Chora, the dark bitterness. Dealing with the dark bitterness, right? So usually that's what we would call today dealing with depression. So that's like most, it is an incredibly inspirational book. The reason it became so popular is because the messages of the Likutei Maharan are so apropos for today's society.
Did he die very young?
Yeah, he died at 37.
When did he?
He lived in the late 1700s to the early 1800s. Yeah. And he didn't appoint a successor. So after he died, like 200 years ago, there was no leader. And they called the Breslov Hasidim, the Taita Hasidim, the dead Hasidim, they called them, because they didn't have any kind of leader. And they used to go, a small group of them, used to go to Uman, where he was buried in Ukraine. Right, so it used to be like 10, the Mamish had like a minion, used to go every Hashanah to their thing. Throughout communist rule, they did it. A little small group, and there were no Breslov Hasidim. Then, with the whole Baal Tshuva movement in Israel, so Breslov like exploded, and they became like a super duper popular. It's because. Yeah. So that's a whole other discussion where that came from, the Nachman Breslov, whatever it is. But the point is that the reason it happened is because his messages speak to secular Israeli Jews. Like, people, you know, who don't have any meaning in their lives, so Rabbi Nachman's message is very, very, you know, speak very strongly to it. So the point is that, so he's a very famous personality. I think it's the first time I'm quoting Likutei Maharan in a shir. So Likutei Maharan discusses this point about, Maharan stands for Moreinu Harav Nachman. So he discusses this point with the Ruach HaKodesh, and he gives tremendous insight about what that means for us. Kimashem edabrim beinola bein kono. What a person speaks between themselves and between God, hu bechinas Ruach HaKodesh. This is Ruach HaKodesh. V'David hamelach alav ha-shalom, shayamalasu gedolam o, David, who was such a lofty individual, yiseid mizeh sefer tehillim, from this type of Ruach HaKodesh, of speaking with God. Rabbi Nachman talks all the time, you have to talk to Hashem. You have to, he said, the biographies about him say, when he was a little boy, he used to go out into the forest, and he used to talk. He was just, you know, in Yiddish, he would talk to God. That was his, right, the Baal Shem Tov encouraged that very much. So, David HaMelech used this type of Ruach Kodesh to write Sefer Tehillim. V'kein chal echad lefi b'chinaso hu b'chinas Ruach Kodesh. And when every individual does this, when they speak to Hashem, when they speak with themselves, that is Ruach HaKodesh. Kamosha Kasov, like it says in Tehillim, Leich amar, l'cha amar libi. To you does my heart say, meaning my heart is the one talking. Kamosha Perish Rashi, l'cha b'shvilcha u'b'shlichuscha. Rashi says, what does it mean, l'cha? Meaning you, for you, for Hashem, my heart is talking. Amar li libi, as a result of that, my heart speaks to me because I'm speaking to you. Shekoha devarim shalev omer, everything which the heart says, heim divrei Hashem yisbarach mamish, are the words of God. V'hu b'chinas Ruach HaKodesh. You can see why this would speak to someone, right? And this is the real meaning of Ruach HaKodesh. V'tzarech l'chad ish tamid, a person always has to renew. L'vakish b'chol pam b'sachanunim divrei ritzuyim chadashim. A person always has to inspire in themselves new ways to sing to God and to write new tefillos. V'lizkos lazeh. And in order to do this, to have the merit to do this, tzarech taras alev. You have to have pureness of heart, which means, in modern day words, pureness of heart means in touch with oneself, right? Not, as opposed to not impurifying and not being in touch with it. V'taras alev, who, what is it? Pureness of heart. Al yideshem islahib u'boer libo l'ashem yisparach. It's when a person's heart bleeds and he thirsts for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Al zeh nitar alev, through that the heart is purified. Ki neged shenislahi v'nivar la'avera ulotav arach has v'shalom. Just like a person will burn and desire to do an avera, or for passion, or for sin, shemizeh nitmalibo, which impurifies the heart, neged zetzarech shiislahi v'yivar libo l'ashem yisbarach. In the same way, a person has to have a burning for closeness to God. And that is how a person will purify their heart. Kamosha Kasav, like the Pasuk says, Kol Davar Asher Yavu Ba'esh Ta'aviru Ba'esh. The Pasuk talks about when you kasher food, when you kasher a pot that was made not kosher, see, it was made not kosher through fire, meaning non-kosher food is cooked, so you have to use fire to kasher, meaning we're not saying the same thing here, meaning you want to kasher your heart, it was made not kosher by fire, by the passion of fire, you have to make it kosher by the same passion. When you have that purity of heart, that is when you will have the ability to always speak new tefillos, which is the very meaning of Ruach HaKodesh. So Rav Nachman says, what was the power of David HaMelech? David HaMelech had the ability to be in touch with himself. Right? He was able to be honest, like you said, honest with himself about everything that was happening. And because he was able to do that, he said, that was the Ruach HaKodesh. I mean, Ruach HaKodesh is when a person is honest and speaks. You're seeing a little bit why the Chazal said, Kolo Ari, his voice is so beautiful. Meaning, not that he had a nice voice. Point is that the way he spoke, the way his kol came out, right, that was what was so special about it. The reason HaKodesh Baruch Hu picked him, the fact that that's maybe why Chazal assumed he was the one that had the monopoly on writing tefillos, because he had this special ability. So Rav Nachman is saying, when we read Tehillim, so what we're trying to do is to get in touch with that. Meaning to find within Tehillim that inspiration that David HaMelech put into it, and then we can, like, draw on it in order to bring it into ourselves and inspire within ourselves that. And that's something we're not going to say, you only get into Tehillim and you won't find anywhere else. So Rav Hirsch on Tehillim expands on this idea. Rav Hirsch was not a chassid, he was a yekka. But he says a very, very similar idea to Rabbi Nachman about David HaMelech's lifetime and his experiences. David's whole personality and the entire course of his life rendered him well qualified to carry out this task, which entailed the moral and spiritual guidance of his people for all times to come, a task for which the Spirit of God had awakened and elected him. For from the time when misunderstood even by his closest kin, he tended sheep in the field, down to the moment when, as the founder of an immortal dynasty, he came to the end of his trial-filled life, there was hardly an instant in the development of his emotional life, nor any situation in his active and variegated career when he did not have to prove himself. David tested and experienced all the bitterness which the struggle with a nature not entirely immune to error, the resulting awareness of guilt, and the fight against ingratitude, envy, slander, and persecution can possibly infuse into the cup of life. But David knew how to utilize every moment of both joy and affliction as a means of striving upward before God, the clarity of thought and purity of resolve and conviction. And he could turn his every thought and emotion into a song born by the strains of his heart. It was for this reason that he could leave such creations of his spirit to his people as an eternal heritage, so that the minds and spirits of both the individual and the nation throughout the ages to come, and notwithstanding the changes time might bring, might be able to fight their way through the same struggle, to strive after the same clarity of thought, and to be inspired to attain the same purity of conviction and resolve. So Hirsch says, right, David's lifetime, David's experiences, David's abilities, that gave him the ability to make this unique book of Tehillim. That's why Tehillim is so special. Right? That's why Chazal say he has the monopoly. It's because of David. It's because of who he was. It's because of the struggling with all of his enemies and being chased and being persecuted for no reason, and all the people in power were against him, and having to live through that and be confident and find the goodness in it. That's the amazing, amazing thing about David.
That
can be
seen, right?
In front
of everybody.
Right.
To anybody.
Right. 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 In Tehillim
Nunalef,
when David HaMelech says his tshuva for sinning with Bathsheba, so at the end he says, he says, if you wanted korbanos, I would give them to you. He says, Zivche Elokim Ruach Nishbar. It's perhaps the most beautiful line in the Jewish religion. The real korbanos of Hashem are a broken spirit. Right? David HaMelech understood the way to bring all of the pain into one mistake. That's what's so unique about Tehillim, right? So that's the answer to all the whys, right? I think that answers all the whys there is. There's a very beautiful radak I wanted to share with you on Tehillim that goes even one step further. So people have the minhag to finish all of Sefer Tehillim, right? Many times, right, either in one day or a group or whatever it is. So what is it about finishing Tehillim, right? And more than that, why is it that David HaMelech's Tehillim are still so powerful today? So Radak has a very incredible line. In Tehillim Ayin Beis, it seems that the author is Shlomo. Right? It says Shlomo. So Shlomo is who?
His son.
Right? So at the end, Shlomo says a line, Kalu Tfilos David Ben Yishai. This is basically, this is the end. Here stops the tfilos, the prayers of David ben Yishai, of David. So that's like a very strange line. Here stops, meaning it's only ayin beis. There's a lot left, right? Here stops the tfilos of David ben Yishai. So the Radak, who's a Pashat Pshat commentary, he doesn't explain like, you know, nice ideas. He explains the simple meaning of the words. The Radak is a very fascinating idea. Radak says, it doesn't say here ends the zmiros, the songs of David HaMelech, or the thankfulness. It says tfilos, the prayers. Right? Very interesting, the prayers. So the Radak says like this. Throughout history, there will be many reasons to do tefillah, right? There'll be all the tzars, all the things that happened to David, as we said, will continue to happen throughout history and we'll need them. The psukim here are talking about, the Radak says, after the world is perfected, after Mashiach comes. Then, kol tefillos David ben Yishai, all the tefillos David ben Yishai will no longer be needed, the prayers, because all of the problems that we daven through Tehillim will be over. And it's only the hodos and the zmiros, the praising points, that will still be important. So that's why it's called tfilos, because every tfilah Radak says that'll ever be needed throughout Jewish history is already contained in the Tehillim. Alright, look at the Radak says. V'lo amar kalu zmiros hodos ach tfilos. It doesn't say this is the end of all the songs or all the thankfulness, but it says tfilos. Kolomar, this is to say, kalu tfilos David menyani kapara v'atzala. This is the end of these prayers of David for atonement and for save and for salvation. Because when everything will be completed, and the Jewish people will leave the exile, and will be in the land of Israel, and then David's descendant Melech HaMashiach will be the ruling over them, they will not need lo kapara, not atonement, v'lo atzala, not salvation, v'lo atzlacha, not even success. Everything will be theirs. V'az kol tefilos David ben Yishai, and that will be when it's the end of the tefilos David ben Yishai. So Sefer Tehillim has it all, right? That's why it's so special. That's the end. Sefer Tehillim has everything. Everything is inside it. A person is meant to approach Sefer Tehillim and look through Sefer Tehillim to find themselves in it and to find the answer to their thoughts and the answer to their questions. It's meant as an inspiration. It's more like a springboard rather than actually. It's something to inspire the person to be in touch with their own Ruach HaKodesh, to inspire the person to be in touch with their own feelings about the nation. So this is, you know, so you're doing a very important thing here every time you're in the group. So I hope that this in some way can enhance your weekly group. Shkayach.